You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last night's lineup at the Republican National Convention featured a wide range of speakers that included Mike Huckabee, Condoleezza Rice, and Vice Presidential nominee Paul Ryan. Joining me now for a look at what stood out is WNYC special correspondent Baratunde Thurston, the former digital director of The Onion, founder of Jack and Jill Politics and Baratunde.com, and also the author of How to Be Black. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
The last time we spoke was before the convention really got underway. Has anything struck you in a particularly strong way over the past few days? First of all, are you still located in Clearwater, 40 miles outside of Tampa?
That is where I sleep, but it is not where most of the action happens. And as it happens, the hotel that we're staying at is the New York State GOP delegation. Mm-hmm. So I get these notices under my door every morning of all the fun they're having during the day. There's beach parties and tiki themes, but I'm usually on a bus or a cab into Tampa well before any of that fun gets started. So I'm at ground zero here at the Convention Center / Tampa Forum.
So it sounds like being a delegate is a lot more fun than being a reporter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a reunion for some of these people. For many, and I've gotten to talk to a few in the elevator at least, they've come a long way. They have they've been elected, so you're here. There's a bit of an ego boost of being sent to represent your district, your committee, your area of whatever state you're here to represent. It's a way to escape your family and your kids. So you have a lot of folks just kind of going all out. There was a bar a few blocks away that was going till at least 3:30 in the morning the other night, and I'm sure that wasn't the locals just celebrating the fact that the convention was here. I'm sure it was delegates, you know, living it up while they still can.
Well, a lot has been made of the fact that Tampa has all these strip clubs and stuff like that, but I would think that that wouldn't appeal to Republican delegates.
I mean, I'm not sure what you're talking about there, and I kind of resent any implication that I would investigate such things. I will tell you, I saw a very depressing photo that a friend shared with me who is also here to cover, and it was a picture of a strip club whose name was Personalities, and they misspelled personalities. So it's sort of a doubly depressing, downwardly looking view of a part of Tampa. I'm sure it doesn't represent the whole. I hope so.
Yesterday, you posted a picture of some lotion that you spotted in the Huffington Post Oasis Lounge. It was called Mint Romney. Is that among your favorite bits of swag that you've seen this week?
Absolutely not. I mean, puns are my enemies. So I had to put on my battle armor when I saw that. Huffington Post has gone all out. They did this in Denver 4 years ago. They built this sort of escape. They actually do call it the Oasis Lounge. And you walk in, someone checks you in with an iPad. There's grass growing on the walls. There's a bar serving smoothies made of ginger and acai and maybe things that were sung to when they were seedlings. It's a very, very hippie sort of experience. I found it odd to be in the midst of the GOP gathering. But my sense from the people who were there, I spent a few hours yesterday, is that it's mostly media folks who are tired of running around trying to find a story, trying to get the shot, trying to say something that hasn't already been said or been issued as an official statement, because these events are so well managed.
But
I did get a smoothie. It was good. It was good, but I did not use that lotion.
What do you think of the themes of each night? The first night was We Built It. Last night was We Can Change It. And many speakers have woven the themes into their speeches. Even if some of them seem to have been loose cannons at times, they've at least stuck to those themes.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't choose woven as the verb. I think maybe kind of smashed the theme into their speech. You know, political rhetoric is occasionally beautiful and often trite and meaningless. And so the idea of we built it, you know, the irony of using we, which is inclusive, to claim some exclusive ownership over, you know, the creation of a business is one level of hypocrisy, which is fun to watch on full display. The whole premise of the argument that we built it is kind of based on repeating an intentionally misrepresented statement by President Obama. So to see it on posters on the wall and everybody's speeches, it's like, oh, you're really going to double down on that. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, tonight I find most shocking, maybe even surprising, we believe in America. They're going with the bold statement, we believe in America. And I don't know if America's ready for such radical right-wing politics to be foisted upon them. What do they think of next? Like, we scratch puppies behind the ear, you know, if they had that extra day.
We like apple pie and mom. Since the first two themes were twists on things that President Obama has said, is the implication for tonight that the president doesn't believe in America?
Implication isn't even, that's too soft. They've said, you know, in so many speeches and direct words, he doesn't share the American dream you and I have. He doesn't believe in America. He's downgraded America. So, yeah, I mean, they're going pretty hard and enjoying it. I mean, this is their party. So both, you know, figuratively and literally, and that's part of the fun you get to have.
My guest is Baratun D. Thurston, reporting directly from the convention site in Tampa. That it has been pointed out that the convention site, the convention hall, was built largely with public funds. In fact, there was a lot of stuff there that wasn't built by private entrepreneurs, but that's a whole other issue.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you have to some degree, people are going to amplify their differences and make the other side look like they said something they didn't quite say and simplify your side just to create more distance in the us versus them divide of an election season. But the notion that you've got people coming out saying, I did this all by myself, it's like, no, you just didn't. Like, history did a part of that for you. Your parents did a part of that for you. Luck did a part of that for you. The people that came before you, the road that got you to be able to build the thing, the licensing board, like, it's such an obviously extreme, oversimplistic, and meaningless statement to say, like, yeah, we exclusively built this. I was hoping during the state roll call that one of the states, because a lot of these states were standing up saying, I'm the great state of whatever, whatever, and we built it. And I wanted somebody to come out and say, I'm from the great state of Virginia, and slaves built it. Like, that would have been an historically accurate and bold and meaningful statement, but I'm just not expecting that at a political convention.
Mike Huckabee, who ran against Mitt Romney, spoke, and many people were curious to hear what he would say after the controversy over Missouri Senate hopeful Todd Akin, who Huckabee has defended. Was there anything you had hoped to hear Huckabee say?
I was hoping he would be as sort of genial and nice as he is. Huckabee's he's not the scary face. I mean, in some ways, he's a scarier face because he's actually someone who's got a great personality. He's got a great story. Did the whole walking thing. He's an affable guy. So I wanted a little bit more, joviality from him. Maybe some tighter jokes from a guy who's clearly talks a lot through his professional radio outlet. I wasn't expecting him to attack Joe Biden for not giving enough to charity. Joe Biden was notoriously one of the least wealthy members of the Senate when he was there. And so to kind of compare his charitable giving to Romney, who is, you know, literally a gazillionaire, like, is a whole new unit of measurement to count the amount of money he has, that felt like really off and sort of missing the mark for someone who I expect to have better rhetorical talents at this point.
Well, his speech was wide-ranging, included mentions of his work with Bono. He slammed Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I think he called Uncle Sam Uncle Sugar. I'd never heard that before. Does he use that on his talk show?
I am not intimately familiar with all the phrases and verbiage in his talk show, so I'd have to say I don't know.
Well, we have a clip of him talking about Obama's Nobel Peace Prize. Let's listen to that.
Look, I realize this is a man who got a Nobel Peace Prize for what he would potentially do. But in the real world, you get the prize for producing something, not just promising something.
So was he suggesting that the president didn't receive the Peace Prize in the real world?
I think what stands out to me is that in a night where so many of the speakers were advocating more war, at a party that authorized but didn't fund two wars, that he would somehow imply that he wants Barack Obama to create peace, and that he endorses this notion from a party that clearly doesn't. That's the disconnect for me in that comment, much more than reality versus non.
A few people have been critical of Condoleezza Rice's speech. The crowd loved her, considering that she's one of the few Bush administration members in Tampa. Were you surprised by how the delegates responded to her?
No, I wasn't. I think, you know, look, Condoleezza Rice is, she's probably the smartest person at the convention. And it doesn't make her correct. I mean, she planned the Iraq war. That's a major demerit and failure, and there should be some reckoning for that.
Well, that's your opinion, Baratunde.
It is my opinion.
Some of us just love that war.
But she's definitely, she comes across as, in terms of even her speaking style, her mastery of the stage, she is clearly on top of her game, or at least her version of it. And for the folks in the room, it's like, oh, I imagine there's a longing for more of that.
Well,
because
she,
so many of the other people just can't step to her in that same way.
Well,
What stood out to me about her talk, though, is you know, her policy prescriptions are just utterly ridiculous. But her personal story, like, I can't deny where she's been and where she's arrived at and how smart she is. And there's something really admirable about that. And she got this deep personal story. And then she basically tried to transfer all the credibility embedded in her emotional, powerful narrative to Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. And it just, that segue did not work for me. It does not follow. And so I was like, I see what she was trying to do. But it's like, yeah, you might be great. You certainly aren't as horrible. But that has nothing to do with these other two dudes who are accepting this nomination tonight and tomorrow night.
Well, she started off talking about foreign policy, something that has not been discussed much during the campaign so far. But she also talked about domestic policy. And one of the lines that stood out was this one about education.
And we need to give parents greater choice, particularly poor parents, whose kids, very often minorities, are trapped in failing neighborhood schools. This is the civil rights issue of our day.
When did charter schools become a civil rights issue?
It was a great line, and I started to read an article but didn't get through it about how that claimed to undermine that argument that there is no crisis in the way that she laid out. I mean, but I will say the perspective on education and what we need to do to improve it, There is a truth to that I don't think any side can deny. We have, whether it's failing neighborhood schools or just the failure of our overall curriculum to prepare people for the future and the structure of our school days and the way subjects are siloed and how we reward or don't reward teachers, there's a lot of work to be done to fix our education system. She didn't have to go into detail last night.
Well,
it was a solid line, which I think resonated with a lot of folks.
The big speech of the night was by Paul Ryan, and we'll be talking about some of the policy in that speech later with Jonathan Capehart. But I want to get your reaction to two of the lines from his speech. The first was this one about the place that many young people find themselves in.
College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life.
And the other clip was about the generational differences between Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan.
We're a full generation apart, Governor Romney and I. And in some ways, we're different. There are the songs in his iPod, which I've heard on the campaign bus. And I've heard it on many hotel elevators.
He also said that his iPod starts with AC/DC and ends with Zeppelin. So I guess this is a way of both suggesting that they understand what young people are all about, or
right.
Somewhere.
Well, so here's
I'm not sure AC/DC and Zeppelin are young people, but also that it was a way of trying to humanize Mitt Romney, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he did a lot of his job. His job was to not mess everything up, was to do the attack thing that the VP does. Was to endorse the guy who chose him, which shouldn't be hard to do. He's been given quite a gift and a bit of a burden, and to continue to spread misinformation that has been proven to be misinformation over and over again. So the, you know, the college kid thing, I mean, it's just interesting to separate the argument. You know, one of the reasons that kids can't get jobs is because the economy is so wrecked and their parents, you know, the job market isn't available, and that is a result of some significant efforts on the part of his party, and not just his party, but significantly on the part of his party, to create those conditions, to deregulate the banks and let smart people go wild not knowing what they're doing with our financial markets. You assign a little piece of blame and ignore the full context of what you're about. In terms of the music, I found that to be odd. I mean, the music has been on the ground here one of the most horrifying parts of the experience. It's just terrible music. It's like a low rent country music festival, and there's some great country music out there, and this is not it. I didn't understand why the party with the most money couldn't just buy better music to entertain people during this process, to have these segues be less awkward and painful. So his iPod joke, notwithstanding, which I thought was funny about Romney, overall the music here has been quite painful.
Well, Will.
And then his attempt to kind of lay blame for the factory closing on Obama, which has been, you know, this factory in Wisconsin that Obama spoke at, and Ryan says, Obama promised to keep it open for 100 years. It didn't last the first year. I mean, it was shuttered before Obama even took office. And that's been, they know this. And he's, so to utter a bald-faced lie so prominently is, you know, it's sort of part of the game, and it's sort of ridiculous at the same time.
Well, we'll see if there's any more truthfulness at the Democratic convention, because we'll be
speaking
to you next from Charlotte or from some town outside of Charlotte.
I'll get into town.
Baratunde Thurston is the former digital director of The Onion. He's the founder of Jack and Jill Politics and Baratunde.com. And, of course, there is the new book called How to Be Black. Thanks. We'll speak to you next week.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend.